Welcome to the third series of the Reworked podcast, brought to you by diversity consultancy EW Group. I'm Rachel Wilson, Managing Director. While I'm on maternity leave, you'll be in the safe hands of our special guest hosts, who each fortnight will be speaking to CEOs, HR leaders, and workplace activists about the steps they are taking to reform and rework organisational culture.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of the Reworked podcast. I'm Mitch Price, EW Group's Sales and Marketing Coordinator, and my preferred pronouns are he and him. I'm really looking forward to be speaking today with Mark Ronicus over the next half an hour. Mark has over 30 years of experience working in the advertising industry, and he's also more recently the chair of Advertising, which is a non-for-profit LGBT plus marketing and advertising advocacy group. Hi, Mark. It's great to have you here.
Hello, Mitch. This has been fun. What we haven't told our listeners is we've had half an hour trying to get the technology working, and it's working.
It's great.
Isn't it? Well
it's
done.
Great. I'm so glad we were able to do it, because normally we'd be in person recording this, but because of the circumstances, it's great to be speaking with you digitally. But I was thinking before we jump into talking about the importance of diverse representation across our screens, would you mind just telling us a little bit about advertising and the important work that it does?
Well, of course, yes. And thank you for inviting me to join your podcast. It's very kind of you. So I'm always keen to use a platform to talk about what we do. And I hope there's some big clues in the name, advertising, because we did think long and hard about the name. So, as the name suggests, it's about LGBTQ plus representation in advertising. And we focus in two areas. One is, if you like, on screen. I don't mean that literally, I mean that metaphorically, but how we as the queer community are presented in ads, and the fact that we should be seen more often and that we should be portrayed positively. And the other is working inside the organizations that make those ads, whether they are the brands or whether they are the creative media design agencies that make the ads for those brands. It's about ensuring that our queer colleagues can work in a prejudice-free environment, and that the workplace is as diverse and inclusive as it can be. Because like so many people, we passionately believe that the best work, the best ideas, the best products, the most innovation comes from a very diverse and inclusive workplace. So we work in both of those ways, in the actual advertising, encouraging brands and their partners to make more inclusive ads, and in the workplace to work with employers to make sure that they do what they can to create a very diverse workplace. And I have to say that we're all volunteers. We're more than a not-for-profit, we're a not-for-money. So everybody does it in their spare time. So that has its limitations, but it also brings its rewards, because it means we work in a very frank, open, honest way, because we have no commercial objectives whatsoever.
Absolutely. And everyone in advertising is our advertising specialists. So, I mean, we'll talk more about the work you do with brands in the next sort of half an hour. But to get started, I just really want to talk about the advertising annual report, which sort of outlines where we're at with LGBTQ representation on adverts on our screens. And I pulled out some figures from this year's report, which really hit home the sort of the issues that we're still facing. So one of them is that I hear time and time again, it's that 62% of graduates go back into the closet when they enter the world of work. And another one that's really closely linked with this, obviously, is that 43% of employees identifying as gay have experienced workplace homophobia. So, you know, whether it's on our screens or in our workplaces, Mark, to you, why is it really important that people have access to positive role models to look up to?
Well, I just want to comment first on that quite alarming statistic that 2/3 of graduates go back in the closet when they start work. because that was me, Mitch, and that was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And I just think it's really sad that things haven't changed. And I know it hasn't changed because I speak to young people quite often. And time again, I hear those stories that I was out, you know, in my case, I came out when I was at university. And I think on average now, young people are happy to come out when they're younger. But it's still disappointing that so many of them don't feel comfortable in their skins to be out when they enter the workplace. So that does say something about work culture, that, that people still perceive, choosing my words carefully, that there will be prejudice waiting for them at the door when they work, when they walk through the office doors on that first day. Yeah, so why is it important? I think you've picked on the important phrase that we do an awful lot of work around role models. So the reason that we do want to encourage positive LGBTQ plus representation in advertising is because we know it creates positive role models. And again, back to my youth, when there were no positive role models, really, I had a few heroes. My heroes in my day were George Michael and Boy George, who, if you study your history, both early on weren't able to come out. Boy George, I think, quite notably identified as bisexual when he was first talking about his sexual identity and then has modified it over time. And of course, George Michael was most definitely in the closet for quite a long time. So I had no role models, and advertising was bereft of role models. So that's important. And I think the workplace, it's, you know, equally important too. There aren't enough senior LGBTQ plus people out in the workplace. So whatever we can do to identify, highlight, and develop role models, that's what we will do. And so the advertising thing, I think, is self-evident. It's all about seeing people who are like you, and then you will feel more confident being you. There's that classic phrase that a lot of our activists use: if you can't see it, you can't be it. So that's really important in the workplace. And I think we're doing stuff that is actually, hopefully, very constructive. We offer free role model training. So, Mitch, you should do it if you haven't, you know, because we are all role models, because, you know, everybody is constantly picking up signals from those around them. And if they see a confident out person in the workplace, that will help them develop their own authentic personality in the workplace. And you don't have to be gay to do role model training. In fact, a lot of the training that we do includes straight allies, and there in actual fact is an ally training version of the role model workshops that we run. So everybody is welcome, and we hope that everybody will benefit. You know, even if you're, well, even if you're not LGBTQ plus and you come along, a lot of people talk about them as being really powerful confidence building exercises, because we all want to be our authentic selves. Whether you're a gay man, I identify as a gay man, or whether you're a straight woman, it doesn't matter. Lots of people suffer confidence issues, and that's what it's all about.
I completely agree on that. And I think that LGBTQ representation is obviously just one part of that. And, you know, I know we don't have time in this podcast to sort of delve into intersectionality and all of that, but, you know, that's a really important thing, I think, that organisations need to consider when looking at their representation across the board. And actually, on the point, you know, myself, I'm very aware that I identify as a white, gay, British man. And I see adverts and representation on our screens that really resonates with me. And sometimes I have to sort of take a step back and realize that representation, you know, which I really might resonate with, might not be the same for someone else within the LGBTQ community. So I guess what I'm trying to say is why do you think that organizations really need to get it spot on with representing a diverse range of voices and people within the LGBTQ community?
Well, I think, yeah, you've kind of answered it yourself in the sense that there's so many versions of identity now that yeah, we do need to try harder to be as representative as we can. I fear that I'm tripping myself up though as I'm talking, because one thing that we know brand owners struggle with is the fear of getting it wrong. I just want to mention how we react to that. So yes, one of our objectives is to encourage brands to be more LGBTQ plus representative in their advertising. And we provide lots of tools and resources for brands when they're going on that journey. And forgive the plug, but just look at the advertising website, which is advertising.org. And you'll find quite a few tools there that will help you if you are a brand, or if you work in HR and you're encouraging your marketing colleagues to be authentic externally, as maybe you're trying to be authentic internally. But the point I was making about tripping myself up is that, it is tough to be as completely inclusive as you would like to be. You know, you only have a limited amount of time when you're engaging with consumers in your advertising, whether it's a press ad, whether it's some digital advertising, you know, whether it's a poster. We don't expect you to represent the entire LGBTQ plus community in your advertising. So I actually don't beat yourself up over that. It's important to be inclusive. And there are a couple of ways that you can do that. But the most important thing, before I come on to that, the most important thing I have to stress is to be authentic. You know, and I think it's common sense. Don't be tokenistic. Don't be stereotyping. And in fact, if you do stereotype, you will get in trouble, because it's now written into the advertising standards guidelines that if you stereotype anybody, doesn't matter who they are, this is beyond the LGBTQ plus community. And if you do a bit of homework, you'll see there have been quite a number of gender stereotyping rulings against brands recently, and they get told off, and you know, the ads are then banned. And the same is true of the LGBTQ plus community. If you stereotype us, then the ASA will step in. But I said it's more important to be authentic than to try and include everybody. However, you know, when you're thinking about a campaign, you don't just have to think about one execution. You don't have to think about one campaign. So part of your authentic representation of the LGBTQ plus community might be a sustained campaign. And, you know, you and I have chatted before we recorded the podcast, and we were trying to think of brands that have been authentic and have actually delivered sustainable inclusion. And the first one that springs to mind is Lloyds Bank. And, you know, they just didn't do one TV ad. They've done a whole series of communications across different channels, different media, which has proved their inclusion. And that's my one piece of advice, which is, you know, being queer is not just for Christmas. So think about us all the time. Include us in your campaign basis. And you don't have to include one part of the LGBTQ plus community in just one ad. You can include a whole spectrum, a whole rainbow of our community in lots of different executions, in lots of different channels.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree on that. Yeah. And what we spoke about before this call is sort of apprehension that brands have in sort of getting the ball started with representation in terms of, you know, representing us or other sort of underrepresented groups. But what I'd sort of like to talk about briefly is your role in the Channel 4 Diversity in Advertising Award last year. And that topic was of course LGBT plus representation. I think you were a panel member, if I'm right, on the awards. And it was won by Starbucks for their advert, which they submitted to the competition, which focused on trans representation. And I think it was, like we spoke about before this podcast recording, you know, the simplicity of the advert and how they just sort of followed one person's story in being able to identify as themselves in a Starbucks, and how powerful that was. And, you know, I'm sure you'll agree that a lot of brands won't be able to hit it, you know, head on like Starbucks did in that advert. But, you know, from where you from how you work with brands in advertising, how would you sort of recommend for brands to start rolling the ball in terms of increasing their representation in their communications?
I think that's a really good question. And it is a question that when people are being honest, they ask, you know, where do we start? And because we are scared of getting it wrong. And this is where the D&I team can play a role. So if marketing and D&I are having a chat, and maybe D&I have said, look, we think our brand should be more representative in our advertising because we're doing what we can internally. But then the marketer says, so where do I start? I'm scared of getting it wrong. And I'm pleased you mentioned the Starbucks campaign. Well, let's come back to that because that was very, very bold. And some D&I people and their marketing colleagues might be quite scared by that, I think. But what Starbucks did, I think, worked really well. And what they did do, which is where I would recommend everybody start, is start internally, you know. And we've kind of just had that conversation, really. So if the marketing team are thinking of doing something, then hopefully they are speaking to their internal colleagues about it. But the first question I would ask is, do you have an LGBTQ network in the organization or indeed any kind of employee resource groups? If you don't, then you should start one, and you can get them going pretty quickly. And the first task I would give them is what we've just said. We're thinking of running some LGBTQ plus inclusive advertising. We want to make sure we do it right. You, our co-workers, are as close to this and I know this brand as well as anybody else. How do you think we should do it? And get their ideas before you start talking to creative people. Then share what you've heard from your internal colleagues with your creative teams and keep those talking. Keep the creative development in close contact with your internal LGBTQ plus network or whatever internal resource, whatever internal listening structures you've got in place, and develop it that way. And then a couple of things will happen. Firstly, I am confident that you will develop a much more authentic piece of communication as a result. And because your marketing colleagues sometimes are fearful, if they are fearful, and in the unlikely event that some people start to criticize what you've done, you've got an immediate audience of advocates because they've been involved from the beginning, who I know will stand up and they will defend you. And often when the haters turn in on you, you can use your advocates to kind of turn the haters in on themselves. And that's probably where we should segue back to Starbucks. But let me tell you a bit about the pitch, if you like, because my day job is as a planner in an advertising agency. My job is to work with the creative people and inspire them and help ensure that the creative work that they develop is actually on brand, on message, and really resonates with the target audience. And we're always looking for an insight. And in the Starbucks pitch for the Channel 4 competition, there was an amazing insight. And it's a very simple truth that as you are transitioning, you struggle on a daily basis with the names, the name that you had and the chosen name that you want to go forward with. And one of the few places where transitioning people felt more than comfortable, I think they were happy, was to go into Starbucks and to write your chosen name on that coffee cup and to hear somebody speak your chosen name without any prejudice. And, you know, as I'm telling you the story, I'm getting quite emotional because I saw the real people who that had happened to before they dramatized it into a TV ad. And if you haven't seen the ad, that's exactly what happened. It's a slice of life ad where you see a young transitioning person whose well-meaning parents aren't quite getting what's going on, and dad gets the name wrong, they get misnamed, you know, and dad doesn't mean anything bad by it, he's just struggling with change, with the way that you're changing. and other people at work and so on, you know, and it happened. And then the one place where they go in and the name is, as I said, used without any prejudice, is in Starbucks. And that's just an amazing feeling because it was based on a real fact, a real insight, a real human truth. And so they brought that to life. And the result is a wonderful piece of film that makes me get a bit emotional every time I talk about it. And that's probably why they won the competition and they got £1 million of media to spend on it. But I want to go back to the sustainability point I made about, you know, we're not just queer for Christmas. And to give Starbucks their credit, they did want to have an ongoing campaign. One of the details, I don't know whether you spotted in the campaign when you watch it, but they were also selling mermaid cookies because the campaign, in actual fact, was a partnership between Starbucks and Mermaid, which is the charity for young trans people, helping them and their families and their loved ones through the transitioning process. And spookily, the logo for Starbucks, of course, is a mermaid. So it was obviously a match made in heaven. And they were selling mermaid cookies and the money from that was going to mermaids. And they were planning to turn Starbucks into safe spaces for the LGBTQ plus community. But that all stopped because of COVID. So I don't know, but I hope maybe they would consider picking up the campaign maybe either early next year or some other time. But yeah, it was a great example of not just a one-off campaign where a brand was working with the LGBTQ plus community in an ongoing way. So well done to them.
I saw the advert and they certainly didn't need the music or anything to make you feel emotional, and what a good advert it was. And obviously this year's focus for the Channel 4 Award is on Black representation. So I'm really excited to see how that goes.
I just want to say one thing that, you know, some people may think that picking an ad about a trans life experience is quite unique, but I identified with that trans person because for so long when I was in the closet, my family didn't understand how I felt. And, you know, it's not the same as being misnamed, but in a way, I could really identify with that young person. I think anybody who has been misunderstood or isn't able to feel their authentic selves can identify with that story. That's why it's so powerful.
Absolutely. And this is something which we spoke about before this recording again. But as you've worked in advertising for so long, you mentioned how it's historically been an industry which was, I think you said, the least trusted industry even behind politics, and how do you sort of think that's evolved over time, and do you think that the relationship that advertising is playing with you know, increasing representations and being part of fighting for social causes, how do you think that's evolved over time?
Well, let me be positive. It has improved. On-screen representation, and I keep saying that, and what I mean is representation in all channels, in all media, has improved significantly. I think I'm most concerned about the lack of inclusivity in our workplaces. And for those of you who don't work in advertising, you wouldn't know this, and why would you? But for the past 4 or 5 years, the trade association of the advertising community has been working hard to improve the diversity of the workplace. And I'm so sad and embarrassed to say that over the 5 years, there has been no change whatsoever. The number of Black and people of colour in our workplaces has not improved in any noticeable way. The number of women in senior creative positions have not increased in any notable way. So when my friends who know what I do for a living are being unkind and they use that phrase, it's pale, male and stale in terms of how advertising is run, I'm sorry to say that to a greater extent, that's still true. So we have a lot of work to do to improve our workplace diversity. But elsewhere, we are doing much better. But as you can hear, I think you can hear my thinking. We still have a long way to go.
Absolutely, Mark. And I think that sadly, underrepresentation is across the board. EW Group works with a cross section of clients across a range of industries where they're really struggling with gaining diverse talent and having diverse talent reach senior levels, especially. For instance, Goldsmiths, University of London, just the other day actually published the first study into the diversity in the publishing industry. A really exciting and promising study, which we were really hopeful about, but unfortunately it found that the industry heavily favours white and middle class writers. So I guess as we're wrapping up, Mark, and as the listeners are sort of hoping to, you know, feeling inspired to do things in their organisation, what do you think the next steps are for people in organisations or organisations more broadly to really involve themselves in this important cause and pushing for representation?
I'm pleased you asked that, really pleased, because I go to too many events, conferences, seminars, Zooms, whatever that we do now, that if I'm honest, are just talking shops. And, you know, as you heard me say when I was describing the lack of change that is unfortunately afflicting the advertising community, I think we do need to do things. If you're a D&I person and you're listening and your organization doesn't have advertising that is as inclusive as it could be, then yes, definitely go to our website, download some of the tools. There's a guide to producing LGBTQ plus inclusive advertising on there. Download it, show it to your colleagues in marketing, have a chat. If you don't have that resource group that we talked about, then there's another guide on the site as well to setting up your own LGBTQ plus network. So lots of tools there. And contact us. You know, as I said, we're all volunteers, but we do whatever we can to help via the website, advertising.org. Maybe encourage your marketing colleagues to get involved, because, you know, you can join advertising. There's no membership fees or anything like that. As I said, we're all volunteers. We do it on a non-commercial basis. And to be honest, you don't even have to work in advertising. If you want to get involved, you just have to have an interest in communications and you have to have a passion for fairness, because that's what it's all about. It's just making sure that we are all treated equally. And, you know, we are a rainbow nation as well. So get involved, whether you're queer, gay, non-binary, straight, ally, it doesn't matter. We, you know, we welcome and enjoy being a very, very diverse group of people ourselves.
I hope this episode gave you some ideas that you can replicate in your own organisation. We'd love it if you could leave a review and also subscribe to Reworked so you don't miss our next episode. Diversity and inclusion at work has never been higher up the agenda. The EW Group team includes learning and development specialists, facilitators, researchers and analysts, all with deep expertise in equality, diversity, and inclusion. If you think we can help you rework your own culture, please get in touch.